I met my girlfriend Rita a few months ago. She was perfect. Beautiful. Funny. Rich. Honestly, she was really out of my league. Everyone said so. In August, she asked me to stay with her at a beachside Airbnb for a few weeks. It was her treat. I said yes, of course. It seemed like a really romantic place. As soon as we got there, I was amazed by the house. It must have cost her a fortune. She just said that it was a little present for being such a good boyfriend. We unpacked and spent the evening on the patio overlooking the water. When we went back inside to cook dinner, I noticed something strange. Even though Rita told me that she'd never been here before, she seemed to know exactly where everything was, and all the foods that were already pre-stocked in the refrigerator were the same brands that she always bought. I wanted to ask her about it, but I didn't want to seem ungrateful, so I didn't say anything. She ended up doing all the cooking, and after we ate, she asked if I wanted to go for a walk along the beach. She led the way, and I noticed that she seemed to know exactly where she was going, like there was something she wanted to show me. I was too curious not to say something, so I finally asked her if she'd ever been here before. She just laughed and assured me that this was all new to her too. I didn't quite believe that though. After a while, she took me to a quiet stretch of beach where a crowd of people had set up a bonfire. There were people of all ages there, roasting marshmallows and playing around. They seemed like a normal, happy bunch. At the edge of the water, there was some kind of wooden platform with a tall wooden mannequin in the exact center. A few kids ran around it, laughing. Rita stepped into the crowd and introduced us. Everyone waved and said hi, but I noticed from their expressions that they recognized Rita, even though they pretended like they didn't. We stayed there for a while. I roasted marshmallows while Rita walked around and made small talk with other people. I didn't hear everything she said, but I did notice one word that people seemed to say over and over. Brethren. That really jumped out at me. I mean, who uses the word brethren in normal conversation? I could tell that Rita wanted to stay there for a while, but I was starting to get a really weird vibe. I thought that maybe this was some kind of pyramid scheme group, like MLM or something. I didn't know exactly what was going on, but I knew for a fact that Rita was keeping something from me. So I politely pulled her aside and said that I needed to get back home. Rita's expression instantly turned cold and she said, "You are not leaving." I told her that I really needed to use the bathroom. Even then, she didn't want me to go. But after some arguing, I promised that I'd only be gone a few minutes. Of course, I had no intention of coming back. As I was rushing off, an old man in the group called out to me, "Hurry back! You'll miss the festival!" This was the first I'd heard about any festival. Before I could answer, Rita chimed in. "Yes, we are." As soon as I got back to the house, I opened my laptop and Googled the beach to see if there was some kind of weird group in the area. I didn't find anything. Then I searched for brethren and cult. I scrolled through a couple websites until I saw something that absolutely horrified me. It was an article about some kind of cult without an official name. They gathered in a different place every season for their festivals. Wherever they went, people disappeared. The website showed a single blurry picture of the man who was supposedly in charge of the cult. I recognized him as the old man who called out to me before I left. I knew that I needed to get out of there. This was my only chance. I found Rita's purse on the counter and fished around for her keys. I didn't want to steal her car, but I didn't have any other choice. I guess I could have gone to some other beach houses to ask for help, but I didn't know how many people in this little town were part of the cult. I opened the front door, ready to run to Rita's car and make my escape, when I saw three people standing in the driveway, staring at me. I went back inside and locked the door. I looked through the other windows around the house, but there were more of those people waiting outside. They had the house surrounded. I guess they knew that I was planning to run away. Frantically, I grabbed my phone and dialed 911. The dispatcher seemed nice at first, but when I told her that a cult was after me, her voice turned cold and she said, "Stay right where you are. Don't fight. It will be easier that way." She was one of them too. Losing all hope, I dropped my phone and locked myself in the bedroom. I tried to figure out how to escape, but I couldn't think of anything. Then the bedroom window shattered, and one of the cult members crawled into the room. He grabbed me from behind and shoved the cloth over my face. Instantly, I blacked out. When I came to my senses, I was back on the beach. All the cultists were standing around me. A couple of them held me in place. I was standing on the wooden platform, right in front of their mannequin. But now, the mannequin was on fire. The old man stepped forward. "You've been chosen for our next sacrifice," he said, and he glanced toward Rita, who was standing in the crowd. She was looking right at me. That's when I realized that our relationship had been fake all along. She never liked me. She just chose me as the unlucky idiot that she'd throw into the fire. The burning mannequin crackled behind me. I could feel the intense heat on the back of my neck. The old man asked if I had any last words. This was my only chance to figure a way out of this. I thought for a second and then said, "I'd like to talk to Rita face to face." The old man nodded, and Rita walked up on the platform. I tried to find a trace of regret on her face, but I couldn't. Her expression was completely blank. I had one question for her. "Did you ever love me?" She didn't say anything. At that moment, I wasn't scared anymore. I was furious. I wriggled free from the men holding me back, rushed forward, and shoved Rita to the side. I didn't mean to push her into the fire, but she lost her balance, and in seconds, she was covered in flames. I ran out of there as fast as I could. I ran for hours until I reached the bus station, where I bought a ticket back home. I never told anyone what happened. I was too scared. Since then, I've gotten several calls from that old man. Every time, he tells me that I'm not in trouble. I prove myself to the cult. I'm a member now.
I watched them through the trees. The blonde girl looks frustrated. We haven't come across any lost hikers in months. They're more common than you'd think.
"I can't believe you didn't bring a map, just in case. You were assigned to navigate, so I figured you would bring one too. You know, navigate?"
The sun dyed the clouds a dark orange and rich pink as it dipped below the trees. I stood there for hours, watching them go in circles. They must have walked by me 5 times before they realized they were lost. Father sent me out to see if anyone was lost. We had not come across anyone for months. The lady instructed the man to start setting up their camp. She was going to explore the area to see if she could find a water source and pick up some firewood. The man set up his blue tent with ease. He wasn't smart enough to bring a map, but he had experience doing this. I've watched many people set up tents, but I don't think anyone did it as fast as him. I stepped closer to see what else they brought to camp. They had instant mashed potatoes, beef jerky, dried fruit, nuts, and protein bars. There was more, but that's all I could see peeking out of an orange backpack. I stepped close, and a twig snapped. I gasped. The man's head shot in my direction, and our eyes met. We both stood stunned, looking at each other for what felt like 5 minutes. It's not usually how I go about luring people back to Father, so I was at a loss of what to do next. Fortunately, right as it looked like he would approach me, the lady returned.
"You see her too, right?" the man asked.
She nodded her head and slowly started to approach me like I was a rabid animal. She kneeled to be at my eye level. Her eyes were green with brown and gold flakes.
"Hi, miss. I'm Lucy. Do you have a name?"
I didn't respond or make any movement.
"Any chance your mom or dad are nearby?"
This was my chance. I nodded my head.
"You must be our guardian angel,"
she said with a big smile. Before she could ask anything else, I took off towards the cabin. I tried to pace myself. I've lost hikers before because I weave through the trees too fast for them to keep up. Having to backtrack to find them is annoying, and the delay angers Father. I checked behind me occasionally to ensure they were keeping up. Soon enough, we ran into the meadow where I live. Father was doing laundry, so our clothes, which faded into a light brown over time, were hanging out to dry. Some of them had speckled red stains. I yelled for Father. I heard the man behind me. "Did you ever see The Hills Have Eyes or read Deliverance by James Dickey?" He was out of breath from following me. "No, why?" "They're about backwoods cannibals." I didn't know what a cannibal was. Lucy snorted a little. "Are they works of fiction?" "Yeah, but let's just be careful," he said. Father emerged from the cabin. He was wearing his kitchen apron and his hands looked freshly washed. I pointed to the hikers. He smiled at me and gave me a wink. He walked up to them and introduced himself.
"I'm Edward. Welcome to our little corner of Appalachia."
Lucy was relieved and introduced herself and her friend, who was named Joey. She explained how they got lost and realized they didn't have a map. She wondered if he could point them in the right direction of civilization.
"Huh. I've seen a lost hiker a time or two, but it's usually because they can't read their map. But yes, about a day's hike in that direction and you'll be in Chesterton." He pointed to his left. "Quaint little town, but they'll get you the help you need."
Lucy turned to look at Joey and gave him a reassuring smile. Father continued,
"Since the sun is setting and you'll have to camp for the night, is there any chance you might want to join us for dinner? It's so rare we get visitors way out here."
"That sounds much better than the instant mashed potatoes we have," Lucy said.
Father was pleased, so he squeezed my shoulder. "Sweetie, can you get our guests some water?" He invited them inside and began to show them around. I ran to the kitchen to get the glasses and the special dust Father instructed me to mix in. He was always very specific that I needed to wait until the dust was completely dissolved before giving it to the guests, so I sat and watched. Once the water was crystal clear, I ran out to the front room to give the glasses to Lucy and Joey. They thanked me. Father was telling them about how he decided the big city wasn't for us. He was disgusted by how most people got on with their lives in heavily populated areas. Even churches couldn't get it right. He wanted to raise me in solitude so the world wouldn't sully me. Lucy gulped the water down, but Joey slowly sipped his. Father explained how excited he was to teach me the Bible correctly when he noticed Joey taking his time with the water.
"Dehydration is no joke, boy."
He encouraged him to drink more. Joey nodded, but didn't start drinking the water faster like Father wanted. Lucy began to nod off. She looked at her friend, confused by the sudden drowsiness, and he shook his head at her. She fell asleep on the couch. Father looked at Joey.
"Well, this won't do."
Before Joey could react, Father grabbed his head and pounded it against the corner of the coffee table. Father turned to me and said,
"Sweetie, how about you play outside until dinner is ready?"
"Oh, but can you bring the clothes in and fold them? Just stay out of the kitchen." I nodded my head and skipped out. I yanked the clothes off the wire. I ran them inside and folded them in Father's bedroom. Then I slept on the couch in the front room. I could hear Father talking to Lucy in the kitchen. I wondered where Joey went. Maybe he went back to camp because he seemed nervous being here.
"Joey?"
I heard Lucy say. Her voice was much fainter than when she introduced herself earlier.
"Joey's a little salty for my taste," Father said. "What's your diet like? He must have been about that fast food junk." "Don't worry, I'll make sure it's painless like I did for him. I don't enjoy this. It's just so hard to catch good protein out here. And I've got a growing girl to feed."
I finished the clothes and ran back outside to busy myself. Father made a stew for dinner. He explained that Lucy and Joey weren't feeling great, so they returned to their camp. My mouth watered. It smelled delicious. I picked up my spoon, but Father snapped at me.
"We haven't said grace. Put your spoon down."
He watched me set it down and folded my hands to pray.
"Can you say grace, sweetie?"
I nodded. "Dear Lord, thank you for the food we are about to eat. Please bless it to our bodies. Thank you for Father and Lucy and Joey. May we meet more hikers soon. In his name, amen."
Before my mom died, she told me her only regret was never seeing a lighthouse. It may seem like a small regret, but we lived in Kansas. The furthest my mother ever traveled was to the Grand Tetons in Wyoming, so she never saw the ocean. Her dying wish was for her ashes to be spread in the water that a lighthouse watches over. She hung pictures of one in Maine that she was particularly fond of, so it needed to be that one. As I processed her death and prepared to go to the lighthouse, I thought, why stop at one? Why not show her the entire East Coast so she can finally experience the ocean? So, I planned the road trip. I decided to take it alone to help process my mom's passing in peace. I started in North Carolina and saw a lighthouse in every state going up to Maine. Along the way, I stayed in hotels and Airbnbs. Airbnbs were cheaper, but something happened and I only stayed in hotels after this one. I rolled up to the yellow cottage with red brick detailing, thinking it was the cutest home I have ever seen. I knocked on the door and was greeted by a sweet lady, probably in her 60s. She wore white capri pants and a blue paisley shirt. Sylvia? She inquired after opening the door. Yes, Linda? Oh yes, come in, come in. You're my first guest, so please excuse my excitement. The inside was as cute and quaint as the outside, except for the pictures that lined the walls. There was not one square inch of wall space that didn't have a picture of this girl who looked like Linda, but with a different nose. She had the same coloring as me. Pale skin, dark hair, and green eyes. Is this your daughter? Yes, I lost her 5 years ago to cancer. Oh, I'm sorry for your loss, I started. I was about to explain my road trip and how my mom passed, but I didn't want to make the moment about me. She was something, said Linda. She graduated top of her class. No matter what she did, she made me so proud. After her father died, she moved in with me to keep me company. She was a special one. Like they say, only the good die young. I stood there, not knowing what to say. Linda picked up on that and said, "How about I show you to your room?" She led me up the stairs. The bedroom was at the end of the hall next to the bathroom. She told me it was her daughter's room. She hadn't changed a thing since she died. The room remained a memorial to her. Linda started listing it on Airbnb because she needed the extra money to make ends meet. It was weird and felt as such. Linda told me she was making a roast that would be ready in an hour if I wanted to join her. After being on the road for a week at this point, my mouth watered at the idea of a home-cooked meal. Just looking at Linda, I knew she would make a mean roast. I wanted to stretch my legs after being in the car all day, so I asked her if any places nearby had a pretty view. A quick walk before dinner sounded nice. There was a nice park nearby. She gave me the directions and told me it was 30 minutes there and back. Either the park was better than Linda let on, or it just felt nice to be outside. It was a large park with a wide open field. In one corner was an impressive playground that would widen any kid's eyes. I found a bench under one of the massive trees to sit on as I read my book and watched the people enjoy their loved ones' company. I lost track of time and was about 30 minutes late to the roast. I opened the front door and Linda came around the corner with a butcher knife. "You're late," she said blatantly. Something in her demeanor was different. She was much less warm and much more severe this time. "Sorry, yeah, it felt really nice to be outside, and I lost track of time." I walked further into the house, and Linda scurried behind me to lock the door. "Well, it's ready. Let's eat." I was right. Linda could make a mean roast. She was a natural hostess. It was easy to tell she missed the days when her life had dinner parties. Still holding the butcher knife, she slammed it into the wooden board the roast sat on before cutting me a slice. It was delicious. I scarfed it down. In no time, I was asking for seconds. "You know, you kind of look like Patty. Your daughter?" Linda slowly nodded her head. "What are the odds that my first Airbnb guest looks just like my daughter? An angel must have sent you." At this point, I realized that Linda wasn't eating. Her plate was full of meat, vegetables, and potatoes, but she had not taken a single bite. "Maybe. That is a weird coincidence. But the only things we really have in common is that we're pale with black hair." "I think you're meant to stay with me." I tried asking what she meant, but the words felt tangled in my mouth. My head started to feel heavy. I woke up tied to the chair with a piece of fabric tied around my head so I couldn't speak. Linda was brushing my hair. My clothes were different. I was now wearing a pink sundress that was too big for me. I began to wiggle out of the ropes, but Linda knew how to tie a knot. I went over how to get out of this situation. Linda was older, so I could outrun her and fight her off. But first, I would need to get untied. Instead of struggling or breaking the chair, I decided to play into her delusion. We talked like I was Patty, or how I think Patty would speak. Linda's eyes sparkled looking at me. Her daughter and I looked nothing alike besides our coloring, so I wasn't sure what caused this madness. I convinced her to untie the knots, and she did. Upon releasing me, I grabbed the first heavy thing I could find and whacked her in the head. Linda fell like a tree. I ran upstairs to get my things and keys, but I couldn't find the car keys. She must have taken them while I was knocked out. I tore through her kitchen looking for them, but I didn't have them. I needed to get out before she came to. I threw my stuff in the car and tried to remember how to hotwire my car. I dated a guy a few years back who showed me how. I ripped the plastic off under the steering wheel and found the required wires. I stripped them and held them together until the car started. I pressed on the gas and didn't stop driving until I had to. I'm 43 years old, so obviously I don't have TikTok on my phone. I think it's one of the stupidest things on the internet. I mean, I understand the use of Instagram and Facebook, because you can chat with people and share stories. But TikTok just didn't make sense to me. I didn't even know that my daughter was on it until last week, when she asked if I'd like to be in one of her videos. At first, I was reluctant, but then I agreed. Barca had been pulling away from me lately. You know how teens are. Her mom had passed away about a year ago, and I think she was still angry at me for starting to go on dates again. She never said that, but I could tell. So I thought that if we could bond over something like this, it might take away some of the awkwardness between us. She taught me a 15-second dance, which was mostly just swaying and clapping. She filmed us doing it together, one take, then ran into her room to upload. The next day, she told me that we'd gotten a couple thousand views, which I thought was good. After that, she started filling me in on more of her videos. I tried to act interested, even though I still thought that whole thing was stupid. She mostly did dances and lip syncs and reaction stuff. She had me help her out with a few of them, including one video where she had me balance a water bottle on my head. It all felt so harmless. And I guess the newest videos were doing well, because she kept telling me about the number of views that she was getting. Those numbers kept going up. Then yesterday, she told me that she wanted to respond to one of those TikTok challenges, like when people eat oranges in the shower or whatever. She asked if I wanted to help. I heard about some of those challenges being kind of dangerous, so I said that she had to tell me what it was first. "I can't," she said. "It has to be a surprise." I really wanted to say no, but as a single father of a teen girl who would barely answer me when I asked her a question, I was starting to feel like we were finally bonding over something. I couldn't say no. "Awesome," she said. "Sit right here." She guided me towards our living room sofa and sat me down. Then she pulled out a bandana and blindfolded me. "I don't like this," I told her. "It's okay," she said. "Just sit here and wait, and no peeking." I heard her giggling as she ran out of the room. It reminded me of when Becca was 3 years old before her mom died. She would play hide and seek for hours, and she giggled the whole time. She was the world's worst hider, which made the whole thing so much fun. I missed that time, back when things were simpler. I gladly waited. But when Becca didn't come back, I started to get a bit frustrated. Maybe this was the challenge. Maybe she just wanted to blindfold her dad with no intention of returning and wait to see how long it would take for me to give up. That seemed a little mean, but I wouldn't put it past her. After all, she'd said some pretty angry things to me in the past, mostly about dating again and abandoning her mom. I reached up and pulled at my bandana just a little bit to peek out. At first, all I saw was our phone sitting on the mantle, aimed right at me. She was filming. Then I saw a shape in the corner of my eye. It was Becca, but I couldn't see what she was doing. "No peeking," she said again. "How long do I have to wait?" I asked. Almost ready, she said. She giggled again. I let the bandana fall back over my eyes and waited some more. I could hear her in the corner of the room. She was shuffling around with something. It sounded metallic. I assumed she was going to try to scare me. That had to be it, right? She was going to ask me to take off my blindfold and then jump at me with a mask on. Something like that. I don't get scared easily, so I figured I'd have to pretend. If that was what my little girl wanted, I could do that. She kept banging around in the corner of the room. I heard her drop something heavy onto the floor. What the heck was she doing? I heard a soft moaning too, but it didn't sound like Becca. I couldn't wait any longer, so I pulled off the bandana. Instantly, bile rose up in the back of my throat, and I felt like I was going to throw up. Daddy! Becca screamed. Not yet! She stood over a body that was tied up with rope and duct tape. It was a woman, her long hair covering her face. I jumped off the sofa and ran to her. Come on, Daddy, Becca said. You're ruining the challenge. She had a butcher knife in her hand. The body twisted to the side, revealing her face. Her mouth was covered in duct tape, but I recognized her right away. This was Samantha, the woman I'd gone out to dinner with last week. We just had a single date and it hadn't worked out. I never expected to see her again, especially not like this. Becca, I said, slowly walking closer. What are you doing? It's the latest challenge, she said. The kill the challenge. Everybody's doing it. I'll never forget the look in my daughter's eyes. She was unhinged, unrecognizable. Put the knife down, I told her. She glanced at the camera on the mantle, gave it a quick wink, and then said, gladly. And with that, she slammed the knife down. She would have stabbed that woman right in the chest, but I dove forward and blocked her. Instead, the knife went right into my back. Searing pain surged through me. Becca pulled out the knife. Daddy, she said, you're ruining the challenge. I'll have to start again. When Becca was growing up, her mother and I refused to spank her. We were always patient and understanding, but now I couldn't let her get away with this. I jumped up and grabbed her by the shoulders. I pushed her into the bathroom, blocked the door with a chair, and called the police. I untied Samantha, who explained that Becca had used my phone to lure her here. I'm not sure if she's going to sue us over this. Probably. Becca is at the hospital now, being looked after by psychiatrists and professionals.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
I'm not sure how long they'll keep her there, but at least she won't have a phone. At least she won't have TikTok.